Welcome to another edition of Uncensored with Penny Faree, proudly brought to you by IPSS Electronic Security.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to Uncensored. If you've ever heard the phrase in committee in local government, it might sound like just another bit of council jargon, but what it really means is this. When the council goes in committee, the meeting closes to the public. The media is asked to leave, the cameras and the mics are switched off, and decisions are made behind closed doors. Now, the law allows it, but only for specific reasons, matters of security or ongoing legal disputes. Increasingly, though, in Kwadukuza, in committee has become a habit, and not just for sensitive matters, but for issues that involve millions in public money. On the 25th of September, a report on the security provided to councillors and officials was tabled before council. The speaker declared it in committee, and as protocol requires, the public and the media were asked to leave. We waited outside the chamber as the discussion unfolded behind closed doors. Weeks later, that same report was leaked, and what it revealed went far beyond personal safety. It exposed how public money is being spent without clear policy, accountability, or transparency. The leaked report, titled Consolidated Report on Security Provision for Councillors and Officials, covers security spending on councillors since 2021, when the last local government elections took place and councillors took office. It shows that while Kwadukuza battled a 270 million budget deficit in the last financial year, millions have been channeled into private protection for councillors and staff. Today on Uncensored, we unpack what's happening behind those closed doors, from the security spending and the municipal manager's protection bill to the Dukuza substation and the staggering electricity losses that continue to bleed the municipality. And we ask the question, has secrecy become the new normal in Kwadukuza? Joining me is Councillor Sipho Zungu from Action SA. He's one of the most outspoken councillors on the need for open governance and accountability in local government. Councillor Zungu, welcome to Uncensored.
Good morning, Penny. Good morning to the listeners.
Councillor, now you sit behind those closed doors. You sit inside those chambers. Now, we've had these in-committee sessions, and just the one report, two in-committee items, both closed to the public, millions spent without public disclosure. Now, what's driving this culture of secrecy?
You know, Penny, I think this issue of in-committee, by large, you will notice that obviously, if one ever gets to see these items eventually, you will notice that the author, by large, is the accounting officer. And for some reason, he will always make in-committee items that are... He'll give it an in-committee status when it's convenient to him. You will notice that, obviously, in the recent council agenda, we had to discuss the matter of the CPOs.
Yes. Now, just for the listeners who don't understand what CPO means, can we just give them a brief explanation?
So CPO is a term, it's an abbreviation for Close Protection Officer.
Yeah. AKA bodyguards.
Yes, AKA the notorious bodyguards that are allocated. But obviously with that, it also in sometimes implicates the aspect of state vehicles that may be allocated, as well as financial resources in terms of fuel allowances, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I think what we need to understand is while this one particular one, which implicates a significant amount of people, and I think I can actually disclose exactly who it implicates because it does implicate councillors, no doubt.
Yeah.
And it does implicate the municipal manager by large. And I think the main focus of this item was the municipal manager. But to come back on the aspect of the in-committee issue, you'll find that this one particular was in committee. Yet if you were to go back a few months ago, you would notice that we were discussing the matter of the previous mayor's bodyguards being at his homestead outside of in-committee status.
Yeah. I mean, that was... That made national news.
We talked about the vehicles that he was using, the fuel costs that it incurred. So it was strange that that item, those topics were dealt with in council, which means in the public.
Yeah.
But then suddenly when certain individuals are implicated, suddenly the item goes in committee.
Very interesting.
But I think in addition to that, I was very vocal in council in terms of pushing for it to become in council, which means to be open to the public.
Yeah.
for one very clear reason, which unfortunately not many councillors in the council understood, and I think Speaker herself was also struggling to understand it. But nevertheless, if one had seen the council agenda of this past week, Thursday's council meeting, so how it normally works is when resolutions and discussions are taken in an in-committee item, those are minuted under the aspect of an in-committee register.
Yeah.
And that register is not open to the public also. And then obviously the normal items that we deal with that are open to the public are minuted in the normal minutes. Now, if we look at the minutes, you would have noticed that there was minutes from the 14th of October,
yeah,
2025. And it was specifically on page B and page C, where under announcements, the council minutes clearly stipulates the resolutions we took on an in-committee item. Now, if one understands how municipal law works, under the Systems Act, it's very clear, obviously, there are reasons as to why you can make an item in committee. But equally, there's procedures that one can take to then take that item out of in-committee status, yeah, into in-council status. And one of the very particular things was a term that they use by virtue of implication. So, in other words, if, for example, if the resolutions and the discussions that were done in in-committee finds itself on normal council minutes,
yeah,
then by municipal law, which is actually stated in the Municipal Systems Act, by that law itself, by virtue of implication, it then renders the item in council,
okay,
taking it out of in-committee
because
status.
It's already been made public anyway.
Because so, it's already been, yeah, made public. And now the public knows exactly, yeah, what is meant to be in this report.
Okay.
And in addition to that, obviously, the Speaker of Council did ask for legal's opinion on the matter.
Yes.
And I think for the first time, we all were in smiles and great joy because for the first time, legal had actually said what we needed her to say.
Yeah.
To corroborate what
the... What did you actually ask the Speaker? What did a lot of the councillors ask the Speaker if they can put this item in open to the public?
So...
Yeah.
So from my side, it was a proposal to say that, Madam Speaker, on the basis of these...
Okay, this, yes,
these
this
are
structure.
These are the legal implications, okay, that render this item in council. My proposal is then that this agenda, this council item we're dealing with, be done in council.
Yeah, open it now, yeah.
And for her, obviously, she didn't have any valid rebuttals to it. She just kept on begging and pleading that we continue with this as in council.
Yeah.
And I think a few councillors from the ANC side were also in agreement with the fact that it should be done in council, yeah, open to the public. And I do believe that we had gotten also support from the Independent Alliance.
Yeah.
It was strange how other opposition parties, yeah, were silent on this.
I noted that as well. Can I just say, this? A lot of the matters that are going in committee are so relevant to the public. Another in committee item was the Rocky Park forensic report that was presented in committee. That was a report that implicated key individuals, and it involved human settlements in a budget of over 300 million. And yet that was still closed. But I want to get back to the CPO system. Now, this was leaked to me, and that is how a lot of the public is getting to know information that should be in the public arena, because this is all about ratepayer money and where their money has been spent. Almost 100 CPOs have been assigned to councillors. That's almost 100. And since they took term in office in the last local government in 2021, the cost to the ratepayer has been 35 million rand. And now many of these CPOs are unregistered. Who authorizes them in council? That's been questioned, the legality of the councillors choosing their own protectors, because there has been now a loophole which has obviously come out for abuse. Can you just talk a little bit on that? So a lot of the councillors are actually assigning CPOs that are family members or friends. I mean, these are allegations. There's no proof of it, but we can already see some of the surnames coincide. I've done that. Do you think this has become a channel for abuse now? And, I mean, take it even further. One of the Ward 24 councillors, the municipality, even, you know, he's never lived in his ward. He's had council protection since he was assigned. The number, let me read it here. I'm just going to go through. So, councillor, ANC councillor Dube from Ward 10 in Grantville, he's cost the rapers almost 4.8 million rand in personal security. Councillor Nteko, he's a PR councillor, 2.3 million. We've got Councillor Shandu, 2.4 million. And then we've got the Ward 24 councillor, 2.7 million. And that was taken a step further when the municipality hired him beachfront property, furnished, maintained, paid for with public funds in a so-called safe house. What do you say to all this? Isn't this outrageous?
Well, Penny, I can't definitively confirm or comment on the figures itself.
Neither.
But because obviously the item's still in, well, technically still in committee. Yeah. Although going forward, it will be done publicly. However, just to outline how the process takes place, and I think this will shine some light on where the abuse takes actually happens. So normally when your life comes under threat, you're meant to produce a threat analysis report, which is generally done by SAPS.
Yes, that's right.
And then that report is meant to be handed to the municipal manager, and then on the basis of that, the municipal manager will then assign to you a minimum of one, maximum of two CPOs to yourself as a counselor. Now, unfortunately, our SAPS is heavily encumbered when it comes to administrative processes. So a lot of the times, counselors do not get their threat analysis reports on time. And so they tend to bypass that aspect because for them, the argument is that my life is under threat now. SAPS is taking too long to produce this report, hence I need a CPO now. So I'm of the belief that obviously the municipal manager had, in most cases, tends to bypass that aspect.
Okay, so he authorizes it.
He is the final, he gives the final say on it. So with that being said, you will find that that becomes a loophole for abuse because a counselor can wake up tomorrow and say my life is under threat.
No threat analysis done.
No threat analysis done. And then put enough pressure on the municipal manager and boom, he has a CPO.
Yeah.
And I've been given inside information. I will not disclose from where specifically, but there are numerous cases whereby the CPO's salaries are cut in half and the 50% goes to the counselor to whom they are
assigned
to.
I've heard these allegations as well.
And with that being said, I think we now can understand where and how the abuse takes place.
Do you know how much a CPO gets on average, what salary they get per month?
From the sources I've been told, it's roughly around about 18,000-20,000 rand a month, somewhere around there.
Okay.
But obviously, they do get a clothing allowance. Well, obviously, that's for those within the
I haven't seen
mayor.
Anyone with dressed as a security officer. In fact, some of them would battle to run a 100-meter sprint if anyone's life was in danger.
I think a number of the CPOs are somewhat questionable. But nevertheless, I think one of the other loopholes then becomes that councillors do have the option of choosing who their CPOs are to be. That's based on our policy.
With no training, no
training,
security.
But obviously the municipality then assists with the training and the obtaining of a firearm license, etc., etc. So in terms of there being speculation that maybe some CPOs are related to councillors, the chances are that is very likely.
Okay, can we just move to the MM's, the municipal manager's protection detail? His total, according to the leaked documents, is just over 18 million rand. That's how much his close protection unit has cost councillors. And that was apparently that hasn't been reviewed for many, many years, and there's been no fresh assessment. Now, funny enough, in the last council meeting, he actually wrote a letter, which was also leaked, to the speaker, and he warned that councillors were benefiting from security, and the same councillors who were benefiting were sitting in the debate, and he questioned whether that was ethical. Now, my question is, obviously, his own ANC caucus wanted his expense to be made public. Now, why would he bring that up now? Do you think that was like a political smokescreen to possibly avert the tension from him and his big bill?
I think one thing we can understand is that obviously we have established that the municipal manager has the final say in terms of signing off on these CPOs. So he would be the one that is most knowledgeable as to who is requesting CPOs for the sake of abuse, who is requesting CPOs for legitimate reasons. So in terms of the shenanigans that go on behind the scenes, the MM should be the one that is most mindful. Now, the allocation of CPOs didn't just happen yesterday. The allocation of CPOs have been happening for years.
That's a very good point.
Which means he's been knowing. If there has ever been any level of abuse, I can't necessarily say what's been written in that letter.
Yeah.
But if he feels that there has been any level of abuse or some sort of contradictions with what the councils are trying to do with this item, he should have brought this forward at the first sighting of such abuse. But the fact that he hasn't, and if his letter allegedly may try to allude to this,
yeah,
then one has to question the intent behind,
yeah,
whatever's written in that letter. If he's trying to shine light on the abuse, then we need to ask the question as to why is he doing so now, yeah, and why hasn't he done so many, many years ago?
You know, I think all this is coming up. Obviously, we're going to see about the transparency and accountability. Can I also bring in another item? Now, the substation, the internal matters also have been sealed off. Now, the Dukuza substation is the municipality's biggest infrastructure project, and that shows the same lack of transparency. The substation was initially approved at 49.6 million. It was later revised at 58.7 million, and there was a 9.1 million jump with no public explanation. And I mean, the total budget has climbed to, there's been reports, it's now 256 million. Now, our local ratepayers association, DOCRA, has gone to lawyers to request the full tender information under the Promotion of Access to Information Act. And Kwadukuza hasn't responded. What is your take on that? Like a lot of, media, a lot of civic organizations are approaching the municipality for transparency. A lot of the tender documents, they are not forthcoming with information. They have to go and do a PIA request. They ignore a PIA request, which by law they shouldn't. Where does this stop now? I mean, this is another level of transparency, that lack of transparency we're seeing in our municipality that's being played out.
I think, Penny, I think transparency is a very key thing, especially, yeah, if we want to establish a level of good governance in our municipality. And this matter of shielding things from the public, I think it can only be validated if obviously it meets the what is stipulated in municipal law in,
yeah,
regards to whether if it's still linked to an ongoing investigation or a court case, etc., etc. But one thing we have to understand is that the money that is used for these projects, for these tenders, etc., for the CPOs, are money that has its source from the ratepayers, from the people who pay taxes, who pay rates, etc., etc. So our residents in the municipality. So in other words, we're using their money. So rightfully so, they should know how their money is being spent. I mean, if we can be open and transparent about how we're spending the money in the budget, then why should we suddenly veil and shield certain things from the public when it's still their money?
Yeah. And what about the Cocter report? Has anything come on that? I've heard as well rumors that the Cocter report has actually been finalized, but it hasn't actually been made public either. Is that something that you've heard anything on?
I haven't heard as yet, but obviously the Cocter report hasn't found its way to us as yet.
Okay. And the Nursery report, I mean, that became public. That was detailed as well.
That was very detailed. And, yeah, I think that was quite the eye-opener.
Yes.
Because, I mean, for many months and years, we were given the notion that,
yeah,
the electrical department is on top of things, especially when it comes to electrical losses and reducing it.
Yeah.
And then the Nursery report comes out only to say that, no, these guys haven't, yeah, really been done anything.
And now in the first quarter now again, we're looking at over 130 million rand in electricity losses. And, you know, it begs the question. Nursery came in, task team has been put together, everything has, process have been put together, yet We're looking at 130 million rand again, electrical loss. If this continues, they're saying it's going to be unsustainable. Do you think there should be urgent intervention? What is actually happening? What are the councillors discussing in the chambers on this issue that could possibly bank the municipalities?
I think it's, well, for those who aren't aware in the public, Action SA has put through various proposals.
Yeah.
This was obviously tabled during the budget, in terms of establishing the revenue protection task team, et cetera, et cetera. these resolutions that the Prosapia put forward would have assisted in reducing the electrical losses. However, you've mentioned that we are still sitting with a very gaping leak in our electrical losses. And what I want to highlight, and this was an item that was brought into council, we haven't discussed it as yet, as it's constantly being deferred, but it's in regards to the electrical losses reduction strategies that were developed in the 2021-2022 financial year. Now, one thing we have to establish is this, and I think the public perception, a lot of people may think that a large portion of our electrical losses is due to illegal connections. While that does contribute, it's not the key role player. In fact, the key role player is our large, our LPUs, which is your large power users, your large-scale power users, such as factories, hospitals, malls, etc. Now, in the strategies that are listed, and there are quite a number of them, each strategy does entail exactly the level of impact it will have. For most of them, it's between 0 and 1% impact. But there is one very particular strategy that says it can have an impact of higher than 2%, which means the level of impact in terms of its ceiling has not been established. So the minimum it can is 3% or more. I mean, the minimum is 3%. The highest it can have is who knows how high. And just to stipulate what that strategy is, I'm going to read it out for you, Penny, because I think you're going to find it very interesting. So it's a strategy. It's titled as F1, strategy F1. And what the strategy entails is that your LPU customer, that there must be a customer audit, and a consumption verification. In other words, we need
how much they're actually
how much they're using. Actually using, yeah, yeah, compared to how much they're actually being billed for. And there are three scopes of work implicated in that. One of the scope of work is that there must be an inspection and auditing of the 493 meters that have been installed, the AMRs, automatic meter readers. Then a monthly metering data analysis before importing and billing on the billing system has to be done. And then the most important one, the back billing calculations and reporting. Because if we go back and we have to analyze and we say, okay, large-scale power user one has been using X amount of power, they have been underbilled for so many years, hence we need to back bill them for this exact amount.
Yeah.
Now, this strategy has not been stipulated yesterday. This strategy has been stipulated since 2021. The question we have to ask ourselves is what has been done regarding these three scopes of work?
And if they had followed that strategy, they wouldn't be sitting with hundreds of millions rand.
And the reason why we're sitting with hundreds of millions of rand, almost close to $500 million, is because nothing has been done.
Yeah, the begs the question, why? Is that pure oversight or is it intentional?
I'm of the belief that it is intentional,
largely
intentional. And I'm of the belief, and I think if we were to do a forensic investigation, my beliefs would be proven true.
Yeah.
And I'm of the belief that with a number of these large-scale power users that should have been backed billed by now or are being underbilled, I'm of the belief that there are individuals in our municipality who approach these LPUs and say, dear sir, dear ma'am, here's how much you're using, here's how much you've been billed for, but here's how much you should actually be paying. Now, we can make this third one disappear if you just compensate us X amount of money.
Yeah.
And that, I believe, is the greatest contributor to our energy losses.
Wow. I mean, these are... those are staggering because if you look at the losses we in the last couple of years it's almost $1 billion. So you can imagine if someone's trying to compensate like 0.1%, how much we're talking about. This is something that needs to be raised, and possibly, I mean, these allegations are really, really critical to the point that it should be raised in council. Indeed. And something should be done. I know we don't have a lot of time. Just last bit, councillor. If there were three issues that you could now fix in council to make the transparency open, what would they be? Just,
I think the main one, and this is something we're going to be pushing even as Action SA, the main one will be that items that are going to be presented as in committee must be presented to council first for purpose of debate. We must know the reasons why that the item is being put in council. And if those reasons do not fall within the ambit of what is stipulated in the standing rules, then immediately on the spot that item must be rendered in council and must be done to the public in the public eye. Also, I think in terms of consistency, and this is something we must be very, very mindful of, because you'll notice that with council and how certain things are done, there's a lot of inconsistency.
Yeah, well, you know what? The councillors also have to ensure that, you know, the consistency is applied across the board.
Across the board. Yeah. So I think in how we've, if there's ever been a matter that one would assume would have been in committee, and we've dealt with it in council, then that must become the consistent precedence we set going forward.
Yeah.
And we should not find ourselves in a situation whereby we're dealing with a similar item in committee when a few months ago we've dealt with a similar item in council.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing, if there ever is something that we can bring in terms of transparency for the public, because obviously the only way you can shield transparency is by in committee. I think if we put in that mechanism that items that are rendered in committee must be first presented to council with valid reasonings as to why it's an in committee item. And if those reasons are not in alignment with what's in the standing rules and what's in the municipal law,
then
that an item must be dealt with as in council, open to the public, because the public deserves to know.
Absolutely.
And if we establish transparency, we can then, we're one step closer to good governance. And once you establish good governance, you will then automatically see service delivery improve.
Absolutely. You know, and for me, I think there's such an appetite right now for accountability. That's the buzzword. We want to see accountability. The public wants to see accountability. That was Councillor Sipho Zungu from Action SA. The facts speak for themselves. Two closed sessions on a security report, nearly 100 CPOs costing over 35 million rand, a municipal manager's bill, security bill, 18.7 million. A substation nearing 256 million with tender details withheld and electricity losses that continue to bleed the municipality. Reports like these should be public, not leaked, because public money is public information. I'm Penny Faree and this has been Uncensored. Thank you for joining us.
Uncensored with Penny Faree is proudly sponsored by IPSS Electronic Security. When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security as the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV off-site monitoring. With over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 35 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.